The following was produced by Pirate Radio Studios Incorporated in Memphis, Tennessee.
This episode from Radioland is brought to you by the New York City Guitar Schools. So you want to learn guitar, there's a lot of ways you can do it. You can go to a music store, perhaps. You can, maybe head on over to, maybe a buddy of yours or something like that. But it involves, having to go somewhere and do something and deal with other people. And your schedule may not necessarily, allow that sort of activity. And now the New York City Guitar School is offering you a way to learn guitar at your own pace in the privacy of your own home. It takes all of the embarrassment out of it. It takes all of the anxiety and fear out of it. You can do it online. Yes, and right now, if you look for their banner ad at our website at radio-memphis.com and look for the New York City Guitar School, learn to play guitar, thing there. Click on that. Follow the links down. Find the videos. You can sample. They got a free video for you called Guitar Trip Tricks and Tips and Hacks, and you can use that to see if this is even right for you. Check it out. It's the New York City Guitar School. Learn to play guitar online in the privacy of your own home. Take a look at them at our website, radio-memphis.com. Hello, my name is Rick Cheddar. And this is From Radioland. Greetings, salutations, hello, how's it going? Welcome to another episode from Radioland. It's been a crazy past couple of weeks. I've spent a lot of time over at our local ABC affiliate here in town, WATN. I did half a week over there. I did a Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday thing over there, and it was fun. It was a great time. Amy Spiropoulos and them over at Local 24, Local Memphis is what it is. Local Memphis Live was the show that I was on, and we got to talk Radio Memphis, and we got to talk about some other cool stuff, and then here we are, back in the studio doing our thing. If you hear what's going on outside, it's because I have the back door of the studio open. It's actually rather pleasant on this evening that I'm recording this, and I thought, why not? I got a couple of cats that are out there, like actual cats, four-legged, hairy creatures that are kind of like assholes, and they're out there, so they're digging it, and they're having them a fine time. One of them has developed probably an unhealthy addiction to tuna, although it seems somewhat unreasonable to think. The idea that a cat has got this addiction to tuna seems sort of far-fetched. He's an older cat. He's kind of thin. He could eat. He could use something to eat, and he loves the tuna, so he gets tuna all the time, which, oddly enough, that comes up. So we buy the cheap cans of tuna that you can get out there, and it's the one with the water, and he goes crazy, and you put it onto his food, and he eats it like he's going to the electric chair. And oddly on all of that, I was reading somewhere online about how if you work for a sandwich company like Subway or Lenny's is a local one here in town. There's Jimmy John's, I think, is another one. There's a bunch of them, where you can go and they'll custom make you a sandwich to take with you. And these places often will offer you a tuna sandwich. And there's a tuna sandwich is one of the most delightful things on the planet. They are absolutely, if they're done correctly, they are absolutely delicious. They're wonderful. Now, as I was reading about this, there was the proclivity of these places offering tuna sandwiches. It had come to mind that in a lot of these places, those that go to work there have to sign a non-disclosure agreement. This is no joke. They sign a non-disclosure agreement that states that they put soy sauce in their tuna salad, and they all do it, but they all have these non-disclosure agreements because apparently putting soy sauce in a tuna sandwich is sort of, it's a trade secret, apparently. Perhaps I've just outed it. I don't know what the ratios are. I just know that it exists in there, which explains a few things now that I know this. The fact that sometimes after eating a well-made tuna salad sandwich from somebody, I have a little bit of indigestion. And I don't know if it's the soy sauce. I don't know. It's not a bad, it's just like a, nothing a cold beer can't wash out. But there's that thing. And I think it's the soy sauce. And I've never made a tuna sandwich at home with soy sauce. And now that I know this, I think I'm going to have to give it a spin and see what this is like. I you know, I'm probably somewhat of a troglodyte for even thinking about this sort of thing. And it's probably some of you listening going, oh, bro, that's how you make a tuna sandwich, man. You got to put soy sauce in it. That's the way it works. But I've never thought of it. I've never considered it until I read that article about how these sandwich places put these people under a non-disclosure agreement about using soy sauce in their tuna. You know, to each their own. I don't know that a non-disclosure works because, quite frankly, all of the sandwich places that offer the tuna are all putting soy sauce in it. Therefore, they all taste the same. That's the thing about chain restaurants is they're all the same. They all taste the same. You know, the difference between McDonald's and Burger King is one of them uses liquid smoke in their meat to give it that char-grilled flavor. It's the thing, I guess. I don't work in an industry that's not a thing I would consider. I'm not a fan of those types of places, but you got to do what you got to do. I get it. You know, those of you that work in those industries, I understand. It's a day job while you perhaps pursue your hobby, which leads me into what I'm getting into on this episode number 130. I mentioned the word hobby because that word has been associated with what I do for a living, which is partly this, but mostly Radio Memphis. Somebody had made a reference that Radio Memphis was a hobby. It's a damned hobby. I have fought with this for I guess 5 years, and at first it was cute. At first it was okay, they're being silly, you know, they don't understand. They're thinking, oh, it's a hobby. You don't have a day job, therefore your little hobby has taken all of your time. You know, I hear that a lot. No, a hobby to me would be like needlepoint, crochet, perhaps. Building model airplanes, whatever it is that you do as a pastime that's away from your job would be considered a hobby. Fishing could be a hobby, for example. It's also a career for some people in this world, but for most people in the developed nations, it's a bit of a hobby. And there's nothing wrong with that. Hobbies are good. Everybody should have a hobby. I used to have a hobby. And I don't have time for one right now. I hope to get back into it. But at some point, you know, you have to prioritize. You have to set your shit aside and go after the things that you're passionate about, the things that you really enjoy doing. And in this particular case, it's what I do here. And over the past several weeks, we've talked about getting the rookies in and out of this business as quickly as possible, whether it's podcasting, whether it's internet radio, whether it's broadcasting in general. There are those who treat it as a hobby and it shows. And then there are those of us, the rest of us, you know, professionals that don't treat it like a hobby because it is the way we choose to live our lives. And that is to provide content, that is to provide entertainment, it is to provide something that we can bank our advertising against and sell it. It's just common, basic business. There's nothing wrong with that. And I suppose there are several other hobbies out there you could take and do the same thing with. Needlepoint, if you're very if you do it a lot, if you do a lot of needlepoint and you have a lot of it laying around, you could sell it. Yes, you could, and you could probably make a couple of bucks. Is it a career? I don't know. Probably. It depends. I don't know that much about the needlepoint business. But for what we do at Radio Memphis and the actual effort of broadcasting, that's not a hobby. It's not a damned hobby, and I wish people would stop with this, because a hobby, yes, you can invest some money into it if you have some money to play. Like, if you know, there's people that make hot rods, for example, or they like to tinker with cars, and they're good at what they do, and they ultimately end up investing a lot of money and a lot of time into these things, and therefore that hobby becomes a thing to them, and that's great. That's fantastic. Musicians, they have been known to be, they tend to spend a lot of money on equipment and time and effort, and they still maintain a day job, and a lot of them hope to progress beyond being that weekend warrior, that weekend rock star, and make a real career for themselves in the entertainment business. It's tough, and some people will refer to them as hobbyists. I will never do that. I will never refer to a musician as a hobbyist. If they're out playing shows, if they're out booking gigs, if they're out, you know, going out on the road a little bit from time to time, balancing a day job, trying to make it work for themselves, really enjoying what they're doing and putting the effort and the time and the money into it, that is not a damned hobby. And that it's the same to be said about Radio Memphis, because I'll tell you, I work 7 days a week, upwards of 80 hours a week on this damn thing. I've spent an untold amount of money into this. And continue to do so. And when somebody refers to it as a hobby, I might take that a little personal. I might get a little pissed off about it because it is not. Is it a passion of mine? Yes, it is. Do I hope to make a living with it? You're damn right I do. I wouldn't have set up a corporation with it. I would not have set up, you know, bank accounts that go with it. I would not have invested the money or the time into what it has taken to get it to the level that it is right now. And as such, when somebody just says, "Oh, it's just a hobby," then I think I have a right to be a little pissed off. I really do, and I think just about anybody would, because, you know, in that instance, because it is something that you really truly enjoy doing that can make a living. Right now, we're in the throes of a big change in the broadcast industry. We've been talking about that. I was talking to a friend of mine on the phone before I came in and sat down here about, you know, he works in the television industry as well. Not where I was a couple of weeks ago. This guy and I go way back. And he was telling me that he's unsure about what direction the television industry is going. He's got three kids. The youngest is 10. The oldest is headed off to college in the fall. And he's like, "Look, my kids, they don't even watch television. They fall smack dab in that below it, but 18 to 34 demo. They're slightly below that, but still, they're the up and comers. They're the generation that's behind the current 18 to 34s. And I talk about ages, 18 years of age to 34 years of age. These are the coveted demographics for advertisers. And the problem is these advertisers don't know how to locate them. They don't know where they are because they're not watching television. They're not listening to radio. Everything is being consumed on a mobile device of some sort. They're streaming it. They're capturing everything. And those of us that have been in the broadcast business, in the radio business specifically, have learned rather quickly that those audiences have evaporated. They really have. The 18 to 34 have evaporated. They've just disappeared into the ether. The 25 to 54 years of age, that's another demo that's also coveted by advertisers, they are evaporating. They are going away. They're listening to their kids, and they're learning that, hey, there's not such a bad idea that I can listen to stuff on my devices. And as such, the world has opened up. It's opened up dramatically. And now there's so much out there that the advertisers don't know how to wrap their heads around it. So they have to look at it, I guess, these are just theories, but perhaps a narrow casting way to look at it. Maybe geo-targeted listening or geo-targeted audiences, and, you know, things like that. There's a plethora of ways. And there's probably ways that haven't even been developed as of yet on figuring out how to wrap their heads around what makes this thing tick. Because if you look at YouTube, there are so many of those channels that monetize their channels, and they put an ad in front of it. They know who's watching. They understand that. They can target an advertisement to that demographic just by basis of content. And we talked about this last time, the internet famous, not last time, time before last, the internet famous, they tend to be a little more of, I don't know, perhaps out of touch with their audience. That's part of the problem. You know, if you're not paying attention to who's listening to you, if you're not paying attention to who's paying attention to you, then you're out of touch. You're out of the loop. You don't get it. You don't understand what's going on, and you don't know what their needs are. And you're just throwing stuff out there, and you're seeing what's sticking. And then that's where it happens. But the problem is they don't follow through with what's stuck. They just keep going with it. And this becomes an indicative problem of the entire internet broadcasting industry. "Oh, Rick, you sure have been harping on this for the past month or so." Well, because I have to. there's been so many problems that have occurred because it isn't, the whole industry is in such a state of flux. We don't know where we're going with all of this. No, neither do the advertisers. Hell, the audience is just kind of, they're just going, hey, I'm going to click here and I'm going to click there and I'm going to take a look at this and I'm going to take a look at that, and you know, and away you go. And they're entertained for a moment. They find something else to move on about. And then they ultimately wind up complaining about it, or they'll share it for a little bit. And then ultimately, after about 4 or 5 days, all of it is completely forgotten. That speaks volumes. If your content is easily forgotten or forgettable, then it's not really good content. I'd like to think that what we do here from Radioland is something that gives food for thought, something that people can rattle around in their head for a while and just kind of let it just soak in a bit and go, you know, perhaps Rick's got a point, or perhaps Rick's a complete ass and doesn't know what he's talking about. Either way, those types of things that are being spoken here and said here. The YouTube channel here is a good example. There's been some that have discovered this this program and have said some pretty interesting things about it, and that's all well and good. You can write me. I'll talk to you about it. Radioland@pirateradiostudios.com is the email address. But when people look at this as a hobby, and this is a third party I'm talking about, the people I know, the people that do this all the time, they feel like I do, that it's not necessarily a hobby. It's something that they enjoy doing with the hopes that someday they can make a living doing it. And it's important to understand. And that's a good distinction to have, because if you have those hopes and dreams that things are going to be good and you're going to make a couple of bucks, then that's absolutely fantastic. That's a good thing to have, you know, on your side in what you want to do and where you want to go. If you're like some people that are in this business and just phone it in all the time, then you're not gonna make any headway. You're not gonna be successful. Nothing will come of it. Nothing will be of real value to you or your audience. And that's another distinction that's very important. And it doesn't matter whether you're sitting behind a microphone like I am right here, running my mouth, sitting in front of a camera doing the same thing, running a radio station, or if you're a musician, or if you're a painter. I mean, think about it. Think about the physical artists that are out there. And I'm talking about the physical arts. The physical arts being the visual and the things that you can touch and you can hold into your hands and you can absorb on a different ethereal level, like a painting or a sculpture or, you know, anything along those lines. Those are the classic arts. Those artists, are they hobbyists? Would you consider them a hobbyist? No. I don't think you would, and I know that they wouldn't either. Their work is just as important to them as anything else. What I do here is just as much of an art in a different manner than another artist, and that's an important distinction to make, because it involves a very difficult act of creativity. Creativity is difficult. It can be violent at times and on an emotional level. It can be very heart-wrenching. It can be glorious. It could run the gamut of emotions for people. And for a person who recreates themselves every time when they sit in front of that blank canvas with their paint in their hand, that's exactly what they're doing. They're recreating themselves every time they make a piece, every time they create something. There's a whole new recreation of themselves. There's another dark side of them that's being exposed, or a light side to them that's being exposed onto their physical art, whether it's sculpture or a painting. It makes no difference. And that cannot be discounted as a hobby. Anybody in the creative arts that do this, whether it's a pastime or not, depends. Does it depend on any of that? It depends not, as I should say. Your act of creativity is not a hobby. My act of creativity is not a hobby. Am I trying to make an industry, a business out of this? Yes, I am. Much like anybody else with their mind in the and probably in the wrong spot, the wrong thought process behind this. I'm not quite sure. I'm not a musician, although I do play a little bit of guitar. I'm not good at it, nor have I ever been good at it. I play for my own amusement. That might be a bit of a hobby, but I have no desire to go book a show on stage with a band and play. That's not me. That's not what I am. But I have a lot of appreciation for those who do. It's the same thing with this. There are those that like to think of themselves as broadcasters or professional speakers that try and do something with it, and they're not good at it, but they're exercising their abilities to do so, only to ultimately find out that they're not that good at it, and they're not going to pursue it, and they're going to go on to doing the other things that they have that their world is set out for them. That's all well and good as well, and I'm not going to beat that dead horse any further, because we've already done that over the past month, and that's enough. But the idea that anybody that is being creative or working in a creative atmosphere or creative world, these are people that can never be considered hobbyists by any stretch of the imagination. Seriously. You might have somebody that you know that is a writer. That's another good one. Somebody who has written books, maybe plays. I know a couple of playwrights, actually, believe it or not. And I've dabbled in it myself. I'm not good at it. But I don't do it as a hobby either. I may do it as a form of maybe creativity, maybe pushing that creative envelope a little bit in my own personal level. That's something that can be done. There's nothing wrong with that. But I would never dare tell a writer who sits there and pours their soul onto the pages or onto a canvas or onto a lump of clay or whatever it is that their medium may be and say, hey, that's a pretty cool hobby you have there. What a fucking insult. And I would hope that those of you that are listening to this and may not have understood the distinction, I'll give you the free pass right now. Just this once. You may have said it in the past, but do yourself a favor and don't say that anymore. If you meet somebody who is creative, if you enjoy that person's work, then tell them that. That's the payment that they often receive. If there's a way to help them do better, if there's a way to help them succeed in the dreams and the aspirations that they have in this creative industry by going out and being that creative person, financially sustaining themselves in the process, then that's a fantastic thing to do. But to sit there and go, that's a cute little hobby you have. I used to glue macaroni to paper and put glitter on it, and I called that art too. Oh, fuck you. You don't know. I have a very good friend of mine. He's been on this show, Brian McMurray. He's the guy who created our logo at Radio Memphis, the Roger. And he's an artist. He's an absolutely fantastic artist. And some of the stuff that I've seen him do is just astounding to me. And he's got this, you know, very beautiful way about his, you know, his countenance is very nice to be around because of that creative soul that's there. Creative people tend to be tortured people. We are tortured. We're tortured by our own emotions. We're tortured by the fact that there are those out there that we don't know whether or not you like this or don't. That's part of it. That's part of the thing that we wrestle with all the time. I try not personally, the way I deal with it, I don't sit down and worry too much about it, quite frankly, because I've got the business mindset. Perhaps I do need to spend more time wondering whether or not somebody cares a lot about this, but I don't want to obsess over it either. I mean, I see numbers, I see the analytics, I see the counts, I see the people that are coming in to download this show, or the people that are listening to the radio station, or that tune into the morning show, or see the things that I've written on Facebook or social media, which is just straight up whoring out. It's promotion, and that's what people do. And I'm no different, but I don't want to obsess over the idea that maybe what I'm doing is wrong. Maybe what I'm doing, maybe I'm in the wrong line of work. I don't want to obsess over that. I don't want to obsess over, am I in the fishbowl and I'm over here being entertaining to those that are around the fishbowl, but I can't see whether or not they are entertained. You know, sometimes it does feel like that. And in this line of work, that's certainly the case. You know, I was talking to Kate about this sort of thing. It's like, you know, being a stand-up comic there's a facet to this that you kind of eliminates a lot of that fear, in that they go up on stage, they tell a joke, they work on our craft, they're doing something, and they get an immediate feedback. They know exactly where they stand with the audience at any given second. Whereas in this business, in broadcast, you don't necessarily get that. You may lay out a joke or a punchline, and you may not hear the laugh until a week or two later when you happen to be somewhere and somebody approaches you and says, hey, I heard that bit that you did about blah, 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 and I thought that was hilarious. That's when you know. So if you become obsessive over that sort of thing, then you lose sight of it. So I don't know. It's one of those things. I should at least be in tune to it to a certain degree, but I don't want to lose sleep over it. You know, there's that whole thing about, you know, live by the sword, die by the sword. And it's the same thing with the creative types. And once again, and I'll mention this, that if you refer to what we do, those of us that are, and I'm talking about we as a collective, as creative people. If you're not creative and you refer to what we do in creativity as being a hobby, somebody's going to kick you in the nuts. There's a good chance of that. Most of us probably won't, but there is that good risk that could happen. So, and I recommend you don't. Not that I advocate violence from any creative person, but it's been known to happen. But if you are creative, if you're a writer, if you're an artist of some sort, if you're a sculptor, a painter, if you use your voice for speech, if you're a musician, whatever it is that you do that you create, which is something that only this species on this planet that we know of does. Think about that. Oh, it's cute. We've seen pictures of elephants, you know, with a paintbrush on their, you know, with their trunk, and they're making pictures and stuff, and it's kind of cute. And there's animals that have been in the zoo that have been painting for years. It's a trick. I'm convinced of it. If you give a chimpanzee a brush, I don't know that he would paint the next Mona Lisa. There's a chance that it could happen, but I'm saying probably not. But the greatest works of art have been created by people, and those people have often been tortured souls, and they have dealt with themselves in very horrible and violent manner to wrench these bits of creativity away from them to get it out to share into the world. And for any of their work to be referred to as a pastime or a hobby is as deeply insulting as it would be for me to refer to your line of work as, oh, how cute. Oh, look at you. You're a cashier at a grocery store. Oh, your life must suck. I would never say that to anybody. That's the job that they're in. That's what they do. You know, we talked about, you know, working at a sandwich shop. You know, the people that work in there, most of them, by and large, that's a temporary job to move them on to something else until they discover what they want to do with their lives. And it's a way to make ends meet for some people. It's not their fault that they don't necessarily like their job. I couldn't do it. I'd be a horrible customer service rep when it came to working for a sandwich shop. And I'd be the first one to tell you, I'd be out in that damn soy sauce thing just like that. But, hey, you know, there's soy sauce in the tuna. And I'd be thrown out of it. I mean, that's my line of work. And I would dare not insult any of those people that work in that line of in that line of employment. I would never do that to them. And it's the same thing with people like us. The creative people in this world have always, always gotten the short side of the stick, except when all of the sudden one of our bits of work becomes massive and becomes huge and we become a big star in that world, then they don't call us hobbyists. They call us professionals, but only at that point. Which, you know, reminds me of the joke about the guy who is a painter. But he's not an artistic painter. He paints buildings and barns. And he's in this bar, and he's crying in his beer. And the bartender says, what's wrong, my friend? Well, you seem to be upset. And he says, you know, I have been painting all of my life. I have painted many, many barns across this land. And I've painted many, many houses. But they never call me Johnny the Painter. But you have sex with one goat.
Here's what's coming up on the next episode from Radioland with Rick Cheddar.
You look at the violence that is happening out there and the people that are trying to stop it, and that they're videotaping these acts, these brutal acts of violence, and all of this business that's going on in there, and it goes out there and everybody panics. Well, guess what? This shit has been happening for generations, but now the technology has put it into the palm of our hands where we can send this shit literally all around the world in a matter of seconds. This show notwithstanding, it's the same thing. Not that I'm giving you anything earth-shattering here, but I try to give you something to think about because this is important. This is very important because as the world is transitioning to fully placing all of our media onto the internet, which is happening, as this progresses forward, there's going to be those who want to control it. They want to stop the spread of information.
For previous episodes, go to radio-memphis.com. To download episodes to your mobile device, Search the show in iTunes, Player.fm, Stitcher.com, Pocket Cast, or tune in. And now, here's more with Rick Cheddar from Radioland.
Our friends at Wizards have been around, and they've been in business a long time here in Memphis, and they are a delightful bunch of folks over there, and it's a really cool shop. If you ever find yourself in Memphis, get on over to Midtown, 1999 Midtown. The place is an institution here. It's an alternative smoke shop. It is a unique gift and gift store. They've got something for pretty much everybody in there, and they're fantastic people to go see and meet and feel and touch and listen to and all of that good stuff. They've got woodwick candles. They've got every incense thing that you can possibly imagine. They've got some really interesting t-shirts and hats and bits of clothing and stuff like that. There's an adult novelty section. There's just all sorts of cool stuff. And they've got lava lamps. And just go in and you'll see what I'm talking about. They're open 7 days a week, 10 a.m. to 10 p.m. And, you know, you can go in there. Now, those of you that are not in Memphis and have heard me talking about it, go to their website. You can find their banner ad at our website at radio-memphis.com. Look, this is WizX. Click on that. Click on the little wizard there, and it'll take you right to their website. You can see what's in the shop. You can buy with confidence. They'll ship it straight to your home. It's a fine place to go and have some business done. They're really cool. If you're looking for that unique gift for somebody or for something for yourself, check it out at Wizards, because it's still smoking. It's time to get into a little bit of music this time out. I want to tell you about this. Radio Memphis has been working very, very hard in getting the recording studio up and running. And it looks like we're pretty much there. We're ready to rock. We're ready to roll. We're ready to push the big red button that says record. And that is thanks entirely in part to in its entirety to our recording engineer, Mr. Ryan Royals. Ryan has been around the industry for a long time. He's a great dude. We're just thrilled to pieces to have him as part of the Radio Memphis family. And he is going to be part of the Pirate Radio Studios recording facility. In fact, he's going to be the head engineer in there. So, you know, you want something sounding good, he's the guy to do it. And he's really cool because he's got a fantastic ear for great stuff. And I have here, I'm going to play a tune here for you of a song that was done in the facility that we are in right now. So you get an idea of what the room sounds like, and you get to hear his work with a great outfit called the Thomas Jackson Orchestra. Here's the tune. It's called Sandwich, and it's right here from Radioland.
Hey, baby, you know that I'm stranded, broke down for your love. Please bring me an automobile, least you can do, my broken love. All night long you know that I'm damaged, I'm cut up for your love. Please bring me a bandage, the least you can do, my broken love. Went all over the world, trying to track you down. Don't want me to run around. starving to death for your love. Please bring me a sandwich, the least you can do, my broken love. Trying to track you down. Please, honey, baby, don't give me the run around.
Thomas Jackson Orchestra from Radioland and Sandwich. I didn't play that because we were talking about sandwiches earlier. I played it because, A, it's a groovy song, and B, my buddy Ryan did it. And Ryan's a great engineer and he's got such a great ear for this sort of thing, and we're thrilled to be able to play that one for you. It's Thomas Jackson Orchestra right here from Radioland. All right, you heard what's coming up next time. And until then, I'm going to get on out of here. I'm going to go see about maybe experimenting with some tuna. Maybe perhaps I need to find the ratio of how the soy sauce figures into the mayonnaise, the sweet relish, and the tuna. Because see, where I came from, making a tuna sandwich, a tuna salad, involved, of course, a can of tuna that's been drained, a little bit of mayonnaise, and a little bit of sweet relish. I like putting in a little bit of dried dill in there just to add a little something. Look, what am I doing, a cooking show here? Hey, whatever works. Maybe a little black pepper, and if I feel really, really out there, maybe a little bit of garlic. But the idea that soy sauce has entered into the equation now, I feel like, A, kind of a Luddite, and B, that I've been effing this up all along. If those of you out there have any indication of how this works, putting the soy sauce in a tuna salad sandwich, let me know. Do it in the comments if those of you on the YouTube channel, or drop me a line, radioland@pirateradiostudios.com. Find me on Facebook, Twitter, wherever, and we can have this discussion anytime you'd like. I'd be fascinated in knowing about how this works. Because, you know, soy sauce, there's, you know, not enough. You don't really taste it. Too much, well, it's ruined. But there's that fine line that you got to find with soy sauce, and that's, you know, you got to be dead on with that, or you're going to really just start effing things up. It's nuts. It's crazy. All right, kids, I'm done. I'm out of here. We'll see you next time. Take care of yourselves. Take care of one another. Don't shoot anybody, all right? We'll see you next time. I'm Rick Cheddar, and this has been From Radioland.
Rick Cheddar from Radioland is produced by Pirate Radio Studios Incorporated, Memphis, Tennessee. All music performed during this episode was used by permission. No part of this program can be rebroadcast or used in any other way except by written consent. For bookings and other inquiries, you can write the show by sending an email to radioland@pirateradiostudios.com. For more, go to radio-memphis.com.